Lionel, in your book, you write a bit about Spring-Heeled Jack. Who is that?
Well, this is a wonderful mystery, George, and one I'm delighted to share with you and our listeners, because it's one that's interested me for many, many years. The very earliest reports of a sort of jumping daredevil, which is what Spring-Heeled Jack seems to have been. He made himself a vicious nuisance in London in Victorian times, but his first appearances predated Victoria by several years. As early as 1817, there were whispers of someone or something, very like this powerful jumping creature who was described later in the fuller reports of Spring-Heeled Jack, as early as 1817. So we're going back very nearly 200 years. And these first reports came from Barnes Common, which was an area of London that wasn't very safe in those days. One of the fuller reports from the Barnes Common area in London came from a businessman. He knew it wasn't particularly safe. It was an area for pickpockets and muggers. But because time was pressing and the Common offered him a good shortcut, he'd been working late one September night, and he took the risk. As he passed the wall of a cemetery which fronted onto Barnes Common, something leapt over the wall straight in front of him. The guy nearly had a heart attack, and he described the creature that later became known as Spring-Heeled Jack like this. It had pointed ears, an abnormally long pointed nose, reddish-orange eyes that bulged and glared horribly, and it wore what the victim thought was a tight-fitting white oilskin costume. The hands, when they reached for him, felt more like iron claws or talons than human hands, and the thing was able to blow some kind of, what the victim said was a blue flame, like a kind of electric blue fire, right at the face. Not surprisingly, our startled businessman, taking the shortcut, ran for his life, and I bet he broke an Olympic record. Jack frequently arrived very suddenly with these characteristic leaps and bounds, and he normally left in the same way. Let's look at one or two of the other things that he did. There was a very pretty little teenage girl called Polly Adams, and was making her way lightheartedly home. She'd been to Blackheath Fair, having a great time there with her friends, and Spring-Heeled Jack suddenly attacked her, just leapt out of the darkness at her. When she was telling the police and her family and friends afterwards, she said that the hands, and he usually sort of molested girls, the hands that had torn her clothes away had felt, just as the businessman said earlier on Barnes Common, more like iron hooks than normal human fingers. She described him as very tall, abnormally tall and thin, but much stronger than such a slightly built man would have been expected to be. He looked as if he weighed about 120 pounds, but he had the strength of a big guy of 200 pounds. Now, this unusually light, slim build, if he had got those kind of wiry muscles that went with it, would give him a very potent power-to-weight ratio. And three other victims confirmed Polly's description, and they said that these glaring, bulging eyes had looked really prominent and horrible. Now, there was another attack in Cutthroat Lane. That's pretty well named, isn't it?
Cutthroat Lane.
Cutthroat Lane, which was near Clapham Common in London. And that the victim there was Mary Stevens. She was a pretty little teenaged housemaid, and she worked in Lavender Hill. Her employers had given her permission to go and visit her parents' home in Battersea, and she was walking back via Clapham, and Spring-Heeled Jack attacked her. He locked her helplessly in what Mary later described as a grip like a steel vice, and then he began to fondle her. When she screamed for help, and who wouldn't, he just laughed insanely, let go of her, and leapt away into the darkness. And unlike the other victims, when Mary screamed, a lot of guys came running out of various pubs and clubs out their front doors, and they're very public-spirited in those days, and, hey, someone in distress, let's get stuck in, let's get involved.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's some big guys racing after Jack, and they would easily have caught him and taken him to the police station, but for his superhuman leaping powers. He just jumped over obstacles that the rest of us would have had to go round. He would clear a 6-foot wall or a 7-foot wall, or he'd jump right over a low building, and by the time we'd found our way round through a back lane or at the end of the road, he'd gone. Now, he struck again very soon after the attack on Mary Stevens, and this time he leapt into the road straight in front of a horse-drawn carriage. Well, the horses bolted. There was a devastating crash, and the poor old coachman was seriously injured. Public-spirited bystanders tried to detain Jack, but once more, he leapt effortlessly away from them, and on this occasion, he cleared a wall 10 feet high.
And just popped right over it.
Just straight over it. I mean, how did he do it? This is what makes it so mysterious. Was he human, or was he some kind of extraterrestrial? There have been a number of very interesting science fiction stories written, and of course good science fiction stories always raise realistic questions in our minds about what would happen in the real world if we applied that science fiction plot to the here and the now.
Precisely.
And if we think about somebody who's been raised on a high gravity world, there's a very good science fiction story of a rich businessman who had, he didn't have a minder, he had a secretary who looked like a perfectly normal, attractive Earth girl. She had, in fact, been raised on a world where the gravity was 4.5 times ours, so that her infant muscles had grown to be stronger than an Olympic hammer thrower, and when anybody came in and wouldn't leave, the boss said, Miss Jones, would you see the gentleman out? And she just picked him up in one hand and threw him down the stairs. Now, the idea of an extraterrestrial born on a high-gravity world, although in that story was intended almost humorously, as well as being thematically interesting, if Jack, or the creature who was known as Springheel Jack, had actually come from some extraterrestrial life zone in which the gravity was a lot greater than ours, then he would have had no difficulty at all, just as if you or I could be among the astronauts on the moon
or on
the planet.
Good point.
You see, we could take the effort that would take us just a couple of yards or 2 or 3 feet on Earth would take us 20 feet on the moon. And we would be regarded by those who lived there, just suppose there were any, you know, intelligent beings on the moon who could observe us, they would say, hey, these Earth boys are strong, look how high they can jump.
You don't think he invented, like, these huge springs that he put in his shoes, do you?
Now, that is a very interesting theory, George, and it's one that we've researched closely because it was one that seemed very sensible, and certainly the people who saw him and suffered from him suspected that he had got some kind of, you know, like the 7-league boots in the fairy stories, that he got some kind of spring power in the heels. But it was actually tried in the German army by a very enterprising trainer, and he got some volunteer soldiers to attempt jumping with spring, and the guys broke or sprained their ankles. And it was totally unsuccessful.